Oh yeah, what condition my condition was in.
I woke up this morning with the sundown shining in.
Where's the money, Lebowski? Where's the f***ing money, head?
It's down there somewhere. Let me take another look.
I found my mind in a brown paper bag, but then...
106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses.
Hit it.
I tripped on a cloud and fell 8 miles high. I tore my mind on a jagged sky.
Okay, you know, you guys aren't privy to all the new so, that's what you pay me for.
I just dropped in to see what condition my condition was in.
Illinois Nazis. I hate Illinois Nazis.
Yeah, let's cut through the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
I lost you $60,000. There is no one who wants to make that money back for you more than I do.
There's just one thing, dude.
What's that?
You have to use so many cuss words.
What the f*** are you talking about?
Don't worry, nobody's listening anyway.
I woke up this morning with the sundown.
Well, I'm on Greg Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tom Howe. We got Greg Pappas on the board and a guest. We should have Matt Byrne here pretty soon. Not sure where he is, but he's not here. SP Futures up 850, NASDAQ Futures up 35. We have... are you gonna now? What are you gonna do now, Greg? If you go to your X now, is Twitter kicks out the bird and the X is in.
Big X.
The X is in.
Big X, big seal.
Might have Matt want to turn your mic on. It would help out.
Oh,
there you go.
Yeah.
That would help.
Yeah,
out.
Big X. It's the Chinese clone or whatever he wants to make. He had the idea back in what I don't know a long time ago to make the super app and have payments and everything else integrated, and it looks like they're going to change the name and start going that way.
Well, here's a guy who's showing without even what did Tom Selleck say in Blue Bloods? Well, over the age of 18, when somebody opens their mouth, you immediately know their agenda. A momentous week ahead as the Fed, ECB, and Bank of Japan near pivot point. How could it Bank of Japan near a pivot point? They never They're 0.5.
They're pivoting.
Yeah, they're pivoting on what?
Sounds like a good headline.
On their head or what?
Good headline. Yeah. Don't we have a Fed report also?
Yeah.
Maybe we can pivot too.
The
show title?
The Bank of Japan faces a different challenge and expected to keep its minus 0.1% short-term interest rate target despite inflation consistently exceeding target and signs of the economy heating up. Economists will be closely scrutinizing communications on their future rate paths. What, I don't understand, I guess I don't get why people don't look at where the market, the money supply, and all that stuff is going before you decide what the policy ought to be. I mean, the policy should follow where we are, shouldn't it?
The policy should follow whatever the headline of the day is.
The facts. Not
right, the pivots.
Well, we haven't... It should. I don't know what exactly people think it should.
If I had to bet, I would bet on it following more of the the pivots rather than, you know, what anything should be.
All right, I know you have amazing knowledge of the restaurant industry. I'm sure it's not in the. I'm not saying it's in the blood, but
yeah, right.
My question to you is: for the last 3 weeks, you know, I take the girlfriend out every Saturday, and we go to different places, and
strangely enough, you know. Tuesday has been big. Bigger than Wednesday. Almost as big as Thursday.
That's because nobody's here on Monday.
Yeah.
So it's the day before to day after
it's
the day.
It's the work-from-home crowd coming into the office.
Yeah. And having to have,
it's a lot younger.
Yeah. All right, so my question to you is, if you go into a place, just a place, and you all of a sudden see...
I'm talking about a sit-down place, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I'm talking about... And if you walk in and all of a sudden you see a crowd that is appreciably less... Then I'll use the term normal. There's no such thing as normal. How do you know? How can you tell whether there's a festival in town, it's summer, the summer is scrunched up into really middle of June to middle of August now, and kids be in school later. So if you're going to take a vacation anywhere, it's going to be like right now. How can you tell if it's
Any one day you probably can. If you look at the week, maybe, compared to, say, like the same week a year ago, you can see where you are in general. I would say if there's something that's off, you know, first you look at the weather, then probably you look to the vacations. So if it's a big, if it's a big holiday, then maybe, you know, some people took off to Michigan or some people stayed home. Or
how do you know whether it's something you're doing? You can, like if it's price, whether it's something.
You can usually, you can usually, if you've got a baseline over the past few years of that week, you can kind of see if you're slipping. You can take out any price increases or whatever that you've done and kind of see what your total volume sold. But in terms of numbers, you would just look at that total and compare it to, say, the same day or the same week from last year, and you can see, you know, in terms of how much you're ordering for the next week, and that's kind of how we at least look at it.
How do you know if you're sending people away, price wise and so forth? Because the prices keep. By the way, this morning you were mentioning on the way in, you went to see a movie. First decent weekend this summer in movies. Look at this, AMC's up 43%, up $1.89 to $6.29.
I think we spent what, $18 a ticket, and then some service fees in Fandango. Saw the Mission Impossible movie. Oppenheimer was too long. So said no to that. Yeah, it was all right.
Well, how do you,
Mission Impossible was wild. There was a lot of action.
That's sort of on the same theme. How do you know on the south side, in Orland, because that's kind of
so
where I am.
So you went into the restaurant and you said, "Oh, something's off."
There's nobody there.
There's nobody there.
But a weird part is there's a bar. There wasn't one person at the bar at 9:30.
Huh.
Not one. But now I wonder, you know.
You think it's because they increased the prices too much?
I'm going to say 2 years ago, the average ticket, Roger and I, we're talking about Orlando, we're not talking about near north. The average ticket, $75-$80. Now I can't get out of any place for less than 120.
Yeah.
But plus there's this yin and the yang between the south and the north side. Regarding cash versus credit cards, north side, I mean, I guess they charge so much they don't care, and people in the north side, people are so independent they run around without cash anyway, right? So nobody has any cash. Now on the south side, every place you go now, they're adding the 3.5%.
Yeah, they do it on the north side too. See it at the bottom of the receipt.
But here's my you know, not to be accusatory on a Monday morning. I'm going to say, first of all, they charge tax on it, which absolutely sucks, even though it's only 80 cents. Now, my waiter was a nice kid. He's the owner's kid, so he's a nice kid. What are the chances?
So he's got the kid working because he can't find anyone else.
Well, he had three or four people, which he didn't need because he only had about 10 tables. And he's got nobody to buy. Anyway, what are the chances of me flipping up a couple of Benjamins and the kid saying, or any waitress saying, "Oh, excuse me, sir, I got to go take the $8 off of this thing." I'm saying zero.
Really?
Well, I'm just saying. But
if you ask for it, they'll definitely.
That's what I'm saying. What I have to ask for, or they recognize, oh no, it's your bill's $10 less if you're paying cash. I bet they don't say that.
I don't know. I haven't actually.
I'm going to try it.
I know.
To see.
Yeah, if I was a server, I would be happy to see the cash. I couldn't wait. But you don't know. Don't know. I know that the restaurant on the operator side, you know, they really don't like that. They don't like that processing fee to be any higher than, call it, 2.7, 2.8. That's. You get higher than that, you start making them angry, and it looks like that is a lot higher now. So
why are the people of this country so anxious to give Visa and MasterCard 3.5% every single time they make a charge?
Yeah, hopefully you've got better than 3.5. 3.5, and maybe a little bit more now are like the individual ones that call it Square or Clover or, you know, what if the more tech updated ones are that high now. It's
well, the ones that rebate 3% got to be that high. How can they not be?
Yeah. Yeah. It all depends on the volume you're doing. So if you're doing, I don't know, how big is the place? If you're doing $1 million, your deal's a lot, it can be a lot different than the place that's doing 3 or 4.
Yeah,
I don't know. They're the ones who are going to be getting the 3.5.
Yeah, but at some point, how do you, the whole, what you just mentioned about how much you paid for a ticket at the movie, and I bet there's drinks now and refreshments there.
Yeah, I paid another $40 for all my candy and fun stuff.
Well, what I'm saying is economically.
That's the business model, by the way.
Yeah,
at least
yeah.
It used to be.
Well, but
the concessions are where they make the money, not the movie is just.
Well, way back in the day, when you were young, the two highest profit things on earth were text messages, where they used to charge you like 4 cents a text, and movie popcorn. I don't think movie popcorn's changed much.
You ever put the straw into the popcorn and then put the butter into the straw and let it go and bring it up?
How would you do that when they put it on there for you?
No.
Do it yourself these days.
You get the big one.
The big one.
Yeah, say the big bucket.
Let's see the big one.
You drop the straw. The big one is...
Let's see the big one. Remember that? Saturday Night Live. Was it the cone heads?
You get the big one.
Before Matt, I
maybe
think.
That's a show title.
Oh yeah.
So you get the big one, you drop the straw on the one side of it, you drip the butter into the middle of the popcorn via the straw, then you pull it out and go into the other side and do it again, and then you could put some on top. Just because it's such a big bucket.
It's not even really butter anyway, is it?
That's a good tip to use.
Synthetic.
It
tastes like butter. Yeah. I can't get enough.
But the thing about economics is you follow the dough. And I think the listeners at some point, maybe some of what I say maybe is absorbed, I don't know. I'm going to say that you go there. The people at the Bierstube, the German place in Frankfurt, are strategically located maybe a mile down from a 3 or 4 theater place, you know, right across the street from the high school where they get the high school football games and stuff, and basketball games and you name it. They would have their dinner crowd, and then they would have a crowd at, I'm going to say, 9:30, 10 o'clock, where they have, you know, a lot of, what do you call the tables that are higher in the bar? They're like bar...
High tops.
So
yeah.
And they would have a whole different menu. Sandwich of this, sandwich of that, this appetizer.
The bar menu.
Yeah, for guys that come in later.
Right.
And Fox's in Orland is now shuts down at 10 o'clock on a Saturday night. None of those places get any of the crowd after a movie anymore, because the movies, A, are too expensive. And B, you can drink and eat there.
Yeah, that's a.
There's no reason to go out for a pizza afterward, is
right?
There? Not to mention you're already broke.
That's a big draw, when you can, especially if they're walking around bringing you food.
Yeah,
it's way more expensive and it's probably not as good quality. But
no, but you're able to stuff your face
yeah. while you watch the.
Yeah, the thought of going out for pizza afterward.
It's peak America.
Yeah, it's a. What I'm saying is, what you do is you shove all this money around. And it is really what you're accomplishing. And the one thing about the restaurant business is it is somewhat competitive. Did you hear this morning on the way in regarding the federal government now is all up in arms about these access fees for, like, tickets and for... they're claiming that if you go to the airport and you want a seat with more leg room because you're 6'4", like me, that the cost that they charge me is totally out of line with what it actually costs them.
Which, of course,
we all knew. But somebody like me might say, you idiots, not individually, whenever you let a business become non-competitive and let it concentrate to the point where there's 3 or 4 people or one, you don't have the staff at government to chase them down for screwing people.
Yeah.
Right? You can't let a monopoly or a cartel or
I'll play devil's advocate. It is pretty safe to travel. They do okay.
Okay, but what I'm saying is, you can learn a lot from railroads. Okay, because you essentially gave people monopolies.
And airlines are just the modern railroads.
Well, they're an oligopoly.
Yeah.
Cartel, whatever you want to call it. So it's not. I mean, if one airline raises the rates for luggage, the other ones aren't gonna unless you're Southwest, you're not gonna come out there and say we don't charge for luggage. They're immediately gonna raise theirs. I mean, there is no It's not like if the seat is too expensive in one airline, you can go to another one. I mean, maybe there might be one or two, but there's no competition there. So when railroads started, okay, there were no roads really, right?
So
the farmer, you're always talking about the grains and stuff. The farmer goes, great, I got a railroad. And the guy goes, okay, how about if I use my railroad to move my corn? How much do you charge? The guy will say, how much you got?
Right.
Right. I mean, so all of a sudden, the government had this massive thing where they had businesses where guys were charging people, you know, whatever. If there was only one railroad and no road, good Lord, you're probably getting paid three times as much as somebody going four times as far on another railroad where there might have been a road or another railroad close, right? So, I mean, so the federal government said, oh, no, we got to stop this. So they went in and they regulated all the prices for, like, years. Same thing they did with airlines. I mean, when I was younger and I first started travel, whatever airline you went, first of all, they'd all take
each other's... Before the private planes?
God. Yeah, before the private planes. You know, I had to get rid of that Lear. That thing sucked. It didn't have a full bathroom and everything. I had to get the Lear. Now I got the... What's the new one? I have...
Gulfstreams?
Yeah, the Gulfstream. Yeah. They're much nicer. Girls like Girls like it better. They got their bathroom, you know, instead of having to use a little seat by the pilot.
Right.
But they didn't like that much. But the Lear was
kind of... Goes faster.
The Lear was pretty fast, though. Plus, it wasn't tall enough. I had to keep ducking. I hate it when I have to duck in my plane, you know. It really sucks.
Yeah.
Just saying, you know. Plus, I got a duck, then there's no bathroom. Man,
those are
first world
problems right there.
Oh, yeah, those are first world problems. But, you end up... Every wherever you went, L.A., the competition, they're all the same price. The competition was in the service, in the food, in stewardesses, what they look like, seriously. Those ladies had to get weighed in every week. If you gained a couple of pounds, you were out.
Yikes.
What was better for you? I mean, the girls in Braniff wore Gucci gowns. And let's say they were clingy. Just saying. But I mean, the food was extraordinary. I mean, in first class, in some of these things, they bring out the whole prime rib and you tell them where to cut it. Can you imagine that today?
That sounds good.
Booze was free.
Well, I imagine you have to get on Emirates or where the other one.
Yeah, you might.
The ones that fly the 787s right over the lake coming to O'Hare.
Well, I mean, it's not the plane kind of. It was you know. It was it's not the planes. They can
I can equip
any
logo.
Plane they want. Well, the Emirates will have one. There'll be what's the other one?
There's a couple.
Yeah, there's a couple that still do. Yeah. Some. Actually, Lufthansa is pretty good, I think. So it was I want to fly in a 747 again before they're all gone. We got to go do Lufthansa for that or Swiss Air.
Pretty I don't sure. Know. I was on one last year, I think.
Where'd you go?
Was it an Orlando flight? I don't know. It was a big
flight. No way you did a 747
domestically. They used to. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm going to say 5 years ago.
5 years
ago? It was a track of time. Maybe. There hasn't been a 747.
I know the last one rolled off the line within the past, like, year.
Yeah, and that was a cargo.
Cargo?
Yeah.
That's too bad.
Yeah. I mean, there hasn't been. But I think, you know what? Why don't you Google who flies a 747? I'm going to say it's Swiss Air or Lufthansa. There's only a few of those. S&P futures up 975. NASDAQ futures up 47. Big week. This week, a lot of earnings in the Fed meeting. I'll be right back, Mr. John Flanagan.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of HomeSource Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your bank's, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Stocks, jocks,
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now. Right
now. Low and roll back, Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom. We had burn on the board. S&P futures up 9. NASDAQ futures up 45. As we continue to sneak up, as everybody's convinced the Fed's going to turn around and pour money into the system. We'll see if they are right. They're meeting this week. I think if government keeps wanting to spend money, especially in the election, the Fed will probably have to go along with them, but we'll see. DAX up 5, call that flat. FTSE down 12.1%. CAC down 32.4%. So yeah, a little bit low over there, but not much. Nikkei up 396. Wait a minute. Yeah, that's 1.2%. That's a lot. Hang Seng, these guys are all different. What is the nature of this, Greg? Hang Seng is down 407, well under 19,000, 18,668, that's 2%. Shanghai down 3, call that flat. It's all kinds of private surveys in Hong Kong about economic activity. How Hang Seng and the mainland are going different directions almost every single, not almost every day, but very often now, Greg.
Almost makes you think they make up some of it.
On the mainland? Or in Hong Kong. Well, Hong Kong's almost mainland now.
On the mainland. I imagine that some of those numbers might be a little suspect.
Friday was what you call an inside day. Dow was up 2, S&P up 1, NASDAQ down 30. So an inside day.
Inside day.
Bonds, we have 10-year down 4 basis points, 3.79. The Bund down 5 basis points, 2.37. Japan down 1 at 0.46. We've got oil up 52 cents, 77.59. I'm going to say the old range of 68 to 75-ish. We've kind of broken out a little bit here, Greg. I don't know if it's an official breakout, but I'm going to call it an unofficial breakout. What do you think? Brent up 50 cents, 81.58. Natural gas unchanged, 270. RBOB up another 2 cents, 282. Gold up $1.30. Gold prices range-bound as traders focus on central bank decisions. Silver down 3 cents, 24.82. Copper unchanged, 382. We've got Bitcoin down 864, 29,261. It's as low as we've seen it for a while. And the U.S. dollar, which has kind of been is a little stronger today with the euro at 111. But that's
unless you're trading against the yen.
Yeah, unless you're trading against the yen. The British pound unchanged at 128. So dollar a little bit stronger, but still, we were talking euro at 109 and the pound at 127 for quite a while. Now they're both above that. Matt, what do you have for us, traffic, weather, sports?
Yeah, good morning. Currently 6:35 a.m. on July 24th, 2023. Weather in Chicago, currently 69 degrees, a high of 86 degrees later on. Sunny skies throughout the day, similar to tomorrow with a high of 94. Down in Phoenix, Arizona, partly cloudy, 93 degrees currently, a high of 108 degrees later on. National Weather Service in Phoenix declared an excessive heat warning to stay in effect until this Wednesday, July 26. In the MLB yesterday, Diamondbacks lost their game against Red 7-3. White Sox lost to Twins 5-4. Cubs lost to Cardinals 7-2.
Wait a minute, the Cubs beat the Cardinals 7-2.
Greg, I'm telling you, it's this ESPN we've always talked about. They keep giving me wrong numbers. It's like they've got a plan against me. Here, let's get the Cubs for you.
Yeah, the Cubs had less hits, but they won by 5 runs.
It may seem like I'm doing this on purpose, but I swear...
It happened to me.
As the Lord is my witness. Okay, yes, here I'm seeing this now. Yeah. Cubs win. They beat Cardinals 7-2.
Yeah, 3 in a row.
We're in reverse there. All right. Well, yesterday in golf, hopefully these scores aren't wrong. The Open wrapped up in England yesterday. Brian Harman of the U.S. took top position with a score of a negative 13 and total earning of $3 million. That's all for now, Chief. Back to you.
Do we have Mr. Flanagan?
We do indeed.
Good morning, Tom, Greg, and Matt.
Good morning.
So who in the U.S., essentially, well, the Brits are going to be pissed if I say this, kind of put the British Open on the world stage?
In the U.S.?
Now, they would say they were always in the world stage. It was always the Open, but that's BS.
McEnroe? Nope.
Do we have any
McEnroe, he's a tennis guy.
Do we have any Jeopardy music?
I'm going to say Arnold Palmer. When he said, if you haven't won them all, you haven't won all the major tournaments unless you won the British Open. And I think the year he went over there, I'm going to guess the purse was less than $5,000. It was like nothing, but it was a big thing to go win over there. And Arnie Palmer said, I'm going to go over there because if I don't win the British Open, I'm not the best in the world. And he went over, and then all of a sudden, everybody here followed him, and now it's, well,
it's, well, it's the oldest, isn't it?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, by far.
But well, I mean, that was what, in the mid-60s? What did Palmer?
It was, oh, had to be mid-60s, yeah.
67 or something. Yeah, I remember.
And he went over, and I think he won.
It wasn't a real tournament until the American went 100 years later.
But he flew over and said, because all the big TV golf was becoming here, where the prizes were, the tournaments were $100,000 tournaments, which was, if you won, they were almost all the same. If you won, you won $20,000, and you came in second, you got like 12-5, and then if you just made the cut, you made like $500 or something, not even that much. But the tournaments were $100,000. And like Arnie Palmer said, you had to win in those days to make any money. I mean, basically. But he went over there, and you know, the courses at that time, most of them weren't even watered. I mean, it was totally links-style courses. Just whatever weather you got, that's what you got. But anyway, Stocks and Jacks, you know, he was never on the show. It's kind of a sad week because when my friend Judge Mike Tooman passed away last Friday, and has kind of a storied career, huh, Jen? 42 years on the bench.
A wonderful obit in the Sun-Times, full page on Saturday's paper. So, it's, you know, I can't imagine too many people like that doing what he did and some of the high-profile cases he handled, and, you know, kind of set a really high bar, I think, for integrity and, you know, doing the uncomfortable thing, whether it was uncomfortable for, you know, the people who appeared before him or for the people he worked for, like, you know, the Cook County operation. But, you know, I give him high marks for being, a good judge.
Didn't really have a family. He was, he got booted out of New Trier, right? And he joins the Marines. So even though, I mean, the guy was fearless. I mean, he's a little Irish guy you could not push around. And, you know, and basically that's the way he was a judge. And it caused me, Jan, to read up on this Jeff Fort case.
Oh, God, I was just going to bring that up.
Yeah. Matt, you just got slammed. Matt only knows Arnold Palmer is the name of a drink.
Who's saying this?
who is, I agree when you say who you sound like an owl. Our man Kevin. I did not realize the history of this guy, but it was and he got invited to
inauguration.
Yeah, some get a little, once you the history a little better than me, but he ended up because somebody said you should take essentially the Blackstone Rangers and sign up to be a community group in addition to a bunch of thieves. He does, and then all of a sudden he's getting what we talk about all the time, the money coming into the South Side. He's getting some of the money to distribute, and he ends up being invited to Nixon's inauguration. What the hell, Jen?
Well, you know, the thing about Fort, when I look back on it, because Fort was, you know, a big figure when I was growing up on the South Side.
Oh, yeah.
And in the neighborhood where I was living with my parents, you know, before I went to high school, the Blackstone Rangers kind of ran things north of where I lived. and it was well known. You know, they had graffiti, or they were written up in the paper. You know, there was no escaping that they were a political force to be reckoned with. And I got to tell you, even in high school today, after Martin Luther King's assassination in April 68, it was the Blackstone Rangers who provided protection for my high school's students to get out of the school and get on buses that had been dragooned to evacuate the school, because Hyde Park High School had, ended its day early, and there were mobs of people all over Woodlawn looking to destroy anything that they could.
Oh, yeah.
The Rangers, provided the cordon that I marched between two lines of Blackstone Rangers with their fists raised. Nobody made eye contact with them. They didn't want to look at us, all these kids, parading through them. This protective, cordon that was set up so that we could get out of there. And it was a handshake deal with the Carmelites not to use their violence against the school or its staff or anything else. And they enjoyed some kind of cachet, in Chicago politics.
Well, yeah, they were getting...
Until it went completely off.
We were totally off the rails. I mean, that's when he went to join the Muslim religion.
And it took a lot of nerve to do what Judge Tooman did.
Yeah.
In that trial. I mean, I can't imagine today, Tom, a similar profile of a, gang leader going before, a judge in Cook County and being more exposed than Tooman would have been. And I mean, at the time, it shows really how seriously people took the gangs as a political and organized force.
Well, they had machine gun nests.
He was willing to send.
They had machine gun nests at 26th Street, and they had Tooman's house was guarded the whole block, front and back.
Yeah,
and
you couldn't
have done that if you had a family. There's no way.
No.
What would you do? Ship your wife and kids to Europe, or what would you even do? But here's what these guys.
Easy thing for judges to do then, as it was always easy to do, was just cave. And there's a lot of that going on too. So this is
how weird Chicago is. In the mid-1960s, this is from Wikipedia, Ford assembled a coalition of 21 gangs. 21. Of 5,000 members. He organized a coalition under the governing body called the Main 21, composed of 21 gang leaders as generals. As the Ranger organization grew, he involved the community in political activism. The gang also received support from a Presbyterian minister, Reverend John Fry, who advised these guys to how to manage their organization. You couldn't write fiction like this out of Chicago. In 1967, under Reverend Fry's guidance, Ford obtained a charter from the state of Illinois to form a political organization. Grassroots Independent Voters of Illinois was the name of the organization. Ford's organization applied for and received a $1 million federal grant from the now-defunct Office of Economic Opportunity to fund a program to teach job skills to gang members. This is where money goes. The Rangers also received grants and loans from private foundations. What the bleep? Unlike many gangs, the Blackstone Rangers were not considered outsiders and largely accepted by Chicago society, with Jeff Ford even receiving an invitation from President Richard Nixon following the 1968 election to attend the 1969 inaugural ball. He declined the invitation, sending his top man, Mickey Cogswell, and one of his generals in his stead. If he wrote that in a book,
I wonder who they danced with at the ball, Tom.
Oh, God. I can't even imagine.
Grisha and Julie? I don't know.
God, it's it. So then he ends up going to jail, right? In 70, he was convicted of misusing federal funds. Duh. And Fort was sentenced to 5 years in prison. He served 2 years in Leavenworth, and he was paroled. Then when he was in jail, he converted to Islam and assumed the name Prince Malik. Then he moved to Milwaukee, comes back here. Who was it? Remember, there was an iconic Chicago picture of the... was it after Martin Luther? It was these guys, and it was the other huge gang was East Side of Disciples, right?
The Devil's Disciples, it was the Conservative Vice Lords.
Well, who were the ones that they had the... Where each one of them had like 500 guys on each side, and they signed some kind of a truce?
Pact, non-aggression pact.
A non-aggression pact in the middle of the field in Washington Park or someplace? Who brokered that deal? Was it Jesse?
I'd have to go back and research that. I remember it happening.
Yeah. Well, then he ends up fast forward to Judge Tooman, who we're talking about. 1987, he was tried and convicted for conspiring with Libya to perform acts of domestic terrorism on behalf of a foreign government. Mr. Tillman sentenced him to 80 years in prison.
And Gaddafi wanted to give him money.
Yeah. The idea was that he was, he's in the Supermax prison in Florence, Colorado, and he's still there, being under a no human contact order since his arrival. Good Lord. So he's been there 18 years under a no human contact order. God, who's got that, Jen?
I mean, he was still, before that, he was still running the operation in prison, you know, before he went to Florence, I think.
Yeah, well, he was
hard to spell.
Oh, when he ended up, what was it? The idea was he was gonna get guns for Libya in return for money, and he was also gonna do a terrorist act here. It was part of his Muslim thingy. So you can imagine what the trial was like when Tillman. How did domestic terrorism? How did that get in a Cook County court, Jen?
You know, I'd have to go back and look at the pleading, because it clearly involved, you know, it was a case of international importance. I'm sure there was enough violation of state law. They didn't have to draw the connection totally. I mean, they probably had local contacts who were working for Libya. I don't think they had to prove Gaddafi's involvement personally, but, you know, it was certainly clear that was what was going on. But, you know, he had been doing this stuff long before that. In 1965, although I don't have chapter and verse to quote from it, the realtor groups on the South Side were employing the Rangers to bust blocks racially, you know, in my neighborhood. So, you know, in 1965, the Rangers started parading down our block, the girls on one side, the guys on the other, with their gang chants and waving chains in the air. And the next week, you know, half the block would go up for sale. They would do this block by block, pretty much.
They had a budget. I mean, they were a regular place.
Was terrorism of just a different kind.
But you had to pay them. They were terrorists for hire.
They're perfectly happy to take money from the realtors. The realtors got their, you know, commissions, even though the sales prices were reduced because everybody's house was for sale at once. But I thought, but this is, even at the time, I thought this is a shakedown.
Yeah.
All the way around, and you know,
for those
this
who
guy's gonna, you know, put the realtors out of business if the rate is going. So.
Well, for those who are unclear on the concept. The Chicago, the blockbusting and everything, there was always, quote, a line between where the black people lived and where the white people lived. It was either, you know, when I was young, it was Ashland Avenue, right, for a long time. I mean, on the east side, it was different streets, but we're west side. It was Ashland Avenue. So everything that was when I was growing up, real young. I'm sure it had been further over east before that, John, because... Because my mom grew up in Inglewood at 62nd and Wallace. Well, that area was all white. But then when she went to Inglewood High School, which means she was probably three or four blocks east of there, she said you'd walk out the front door and there was black kids and white kids, and everybody had families. Everybody was equal. I mean, there was no... I mean, everybody walk out and the white people turn right and the black people turn left, you know, which was kind of weird. I mean, not only kind of weird, it was pretty awful. And somewhere along the line, that area all turned, and my grandparents lived there, and they never moved. So when I used to go over there, up until the house had a fire, we were the only, there might have been two or three other white families on the block, and we just didn't move. But there was no safety issues there, John. There was nothing like today. I mean, there was no guns. There was nothing like that. It was perfectly fine. I mean, the black people were, I mean, once the people wanted to leave, left. But then Ashland is the line, and all of a sudden, there'd be one black person move in there, and they'd try and firebomb the guy's house, and then all of a sudden the real estate people would be on everybody's phone saying the blacks are coming, you want to be the first guy to sell, not the last guy. And when I was doing stuff for the Chicago Public Schools, I was one summer at South Shore. It's the world's greatest gig, but I won't go into that. But so the second summer, I call up Ann Cranley, my lady, and I go, Mrs. Tom, I got one more summer before I graduate Notre Dame, and she goes, well, you want to go back to South Shore, but if you do, there's a guy who's really connected. You're going to have to pick him up on the way over there. And he lives, like, close to you and basically in Little Flower. And so I picked the kid up. And he wasn't much of a conversationalist, but that summer, this had to be 73, 74, Jim. It might have been 74, 75. It might have been before I went to grad school. Some are little flour, where I'm going to say 95% white. By the end of the summer, it was probably 40% white. And that was 8 weeks. It happened that fast.
Yep.
I mean, it had to be somewhere in there, 73, 74, 75. And it just turned, like, right away. And a few years later, Little Flower was closed, right? The high school and the grammar school. And, you know, there was never any tuition there. I don't know if you knew that or not. They had some money from someplace. I won't say the Irish mob, but from someplace. There was never any tuition in Little Flower. Somebody ponied up for the whole thing.
Yeah, I think if you remember, that if you'd registered at the parish,
yeah,
you could attend, I don't know if it was the high school. I think attend
high school, school too. Sure. I think it was high school, too.
High school, too. It was co-ed, too. High school,
yeah, co-ed. One of my clients actually went there. But it was a huge parish. There was a lot of people in that parish. A lot of, unlike like St. John Fisher, was pretty much all single-family homes. I mean, Little Flower had a lot of 2- and 3- and 4-story buildings. There were a lot of apartments there. So I'm going to say there were more people per square mile than St. John Fisher by far. But anyway, no,
what this really does do, Tommy, just to return to the terrorism thing for a second, things changed faster than they would have changed just by any just natural accretion of moving patterns or whatever, because of amplified perceptions of crime. And the Rangers were part of that. And some whites benefited from it. Maybe the Rangers ultimately benefited the most. But this is, it's an old story. And you know, for those who didn't see it happening or see it happening multiple times, as it happened in my parents' situation, you get pretty sick of it. And
oh, yeah.
It was really good to see Fort finally, you know, get what was coming to him with Tooman. And I always thought that was a tough thing for any judge to do. And I really was grateful for what he did. It showed the right way to attack gangs. You treat them as the kind of enemy they really evolved into. We've lost all that kind of nerve now.
Well, what recently... and I'll take a shot. I might as well because it's well deserved. After the Jesse Smollett case was here in Chicago. Now Tooman's at this time, he's, you know, what is he, 82, 81, but still he has the reputation of being, if you have a really serious case, then they put him on Mayor Daley's nephew's case, right? As well,
Cushman, yeah.
I mean, they knew he was incorruptible. So all of a sudden, there's this issue with Kim Fox and should. When she dropped all the charges on Jesse Smollett. And there were always kinds of rumors that they knew each other. You know, who knows? I don't know if that's right or not. But she dropped the charges, and there was a big public uproar. And they appointed Tooman as the judge to say, do we need a special prosecutor? And, of course, Tony Preckwinkle was all up in arms that her girl, Kim Fox, was under any kind of scrutiny. So Tooman says, yeah, they screwed this up. And they hired Dan Webb, right? Is a special
prosecutor. Right, and you know what people may forget, because I mean it isn't that all that long ago, but in the days after that story broke with Smollett claiming that, you know, that there had been this hate crime when there hadn't been, right up on stage next to him was Kamala Harris. This is, you know, the year before she, you know, ran for president. She was, you know, on the gravy train from the get-go in this fake story.
Oh yeah,
and she was probably in on it too. I mean, I wouldn't be at all surprised if she were, because she was tied with the family and other people like Tina Chen and tight with the Obamas. All these people were in on that. And Tooman was standing up to those people too, which, you know,
yeah.
Smollett was bad enough, but the people he was dragging along with him were connected in high places.
Well, so the dude says, you got to get a special prosecutor. And Webb came in and said that Kim Fox screwed it all up and the guy should be indicted, right? And so then... The guy's 82 years old, or 81, a couple years ago. And Tony Preckwinkle runs a massive campaign on the retention bill to throw Tooman out of office, which had to be one of the nastiest, most ridiculous things I've ever seen.
It was called Toss Tooman.
Yeah. And he, of course,
and he ended under up, the guise of, you know, what he had done to the juvenile court system, yeah. Which was total BS.
But he'd done... But I mean, and then when he retires, somebody writes an article in the paper about how it's time for new blood and so forth, because these kids should not be kept; they should be all let out and this thing. I think Tooman would keep them if he thought they were a threat. Oh no, it's time for new blood. You know, and you know what? That's such BS. Because I mean, he did an awful lot in making sure that there were places for kids to go that couldn't go back to their families and everything. You know, I mean, nobody's mm-hmm. perfect, but the guy had one hell of a career, and for Tony Preckwinkle to throw any kind of cold water on it because you know, he didn't go with her girl who was totally in the wrong. That's why you pick somebody who's non-corruptible. You want the right call, right? Or at least you want an impartial call. It might not always be the right call, but you want an impartial call.
Well, she showed, Preckwinkle showed pretty clearly whose side she was on. It wasn't the average Chicagoan's side, I'll tell you, at all.
It was her gang. It's their gang that they think they should run everything. And you know what? They haven't done a very good job, I don't think.
Speaking specifically to the juvenile, having a family member in the office working with Judge Tooman, I was the one who called him and told him, and he said that's very sad and very bad. He was a very good guy because he had worked with him personally, so and specifically with the juvenile system, and that's.
Well, Bill Murphy tells some stories when he was a district attorney. He said he had the most imaginative stuff. And one thing they were talking, the defense was talking about how the guy couldn't possibly have stabbed somebody from, you know, in a fight or something. So literally, Tooman in his suit jumps on the ground, pulls out something out of his pocket, says, "Here's the knife. Here's how I'm stabbing a guy above me." The judge says, get up. But I mean, anyway, I guess those guys could to say they could tell some stories is an understatement. I mean, I was fortunately, my buddy Bill. These guys all would meet every Wednesday night because Tooman would show up, and all the other judges, well, a lot of judges would come in just because they liked him. I hope that group doesn't fall apart now, but I hope maybe it will. But I had a fortune of showing up a couple times, and they invited to the table, big table, and after a while they said, you're part of the group, which is pretty interesting. And so I got to see Tooman like every Wednesday for probably three, four years, and always really learned something from the guy. And he listens more than talks, though, John. He's one of those guys takes it all in.
That's what you want in a judge,
though. Oh yeah. But he knew everybody. Those guys all know everybody, and they got some stories. I still think the story about the what do they call them now? The small person. They were in some court. This is years and years ago, and so they had a guy called the transom burglar. For people who don't even know what a transom is, in all the old buildings, there used to be a thing over your door you could open so you get some cross ventilation between the window and the hallway, right? But if you were small enough, I mean, I surely couldn't, you could actually go through those things. So there was a guy that was the transom bandit. So Tooman and Bill Murphy, they're defending the guy. So the judge goes, "Hey, approach the bench." They walk up, and the judge goes, "Where the hell is he?" He's down here. He had a lead over the thing to see the guy. So I don't know. The police didn't have much on him or something. So that he goes, "All right, I'm gonna let you go. There's not enough evidence, but I just want to know: are you really the guy?" Well, there's a transom there, and the judge's in the courtroom. The guy runs over, puts one hand there, pulls himself up with one hand. The other hand opens the transom with his left hand and scoots out. Bill said he was out of there in like 15 seconds. And the judge is like, "Holy bleep, he is the guy." But he already told him he was going to let him go, so he had to let him go. Bill said the dude was opened the transom, was out of there, and he goes, couldn't have been 15 seconds. That's how quick he get into a transom.
Where is he?
On that note, we'll head off to break. Come back. We'll start talking about what's going on this week in the economy. S&P futures up 7. NASDAQ futures up 40. Be right back. Stocks and Jacks.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com, PTIProDirect.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now. Right here, right now.
Okay, you know, you guys aren't privy to all the new so, you know, that's what you pay me for.
Hello and welcome to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tomo. At Burn on the Board, we have Greg Pappas in the studio. We have Janet Flanagan and a horn.
Mm-hmm.
SP Futures up 7. NASDAQ Futures up 38, like I said. Big mover today, of all things, is AMC up 40% with the two movies that finally are doing some good, huh?
Oh, definitely.
I didn't realize Oppenheimer was 3 hours.
Most movies these days are 3 hours, though. They've been really stretching them out lately.
Really? I thought the time of, I haven't been in a movie in so long, I thought they were zeroing in at about an hour 30, hour 40 is the optimum time.
I feel like long gone are the days, and I think hour 30, get in and get out. I saw the new Guardians of the Galaxy, was it last month or so, and it was about, I think it was 2:45, if not 2:30. It was pretty rough.
Got a lot of respect for Christopher Nolan, but when you start saying 3 hours.
3 hours of my life.
Yeah, that's beyond my limit.
What's the longest movie you ever saw, do you think? I think I have two in mind.
I'd say Woodstock, the documentary. That's probably about three and a half hours.
Yeah, but you can come in and out of that one. It's just music. There's no
inter-effing mission, as they say.
Really?
That's right.
The Sorrow and the Pity. You ever see that?
No.
It's about the French Resistance. The documentary.
Okay, but those things you can come and go.
Mm-hmm. Titanic was 3 hours.
Yeah, they were sort of an art theater. Okay. I mean, they were not like for wide release or wide, you know, attendance either.
Man, why don't you look up?
The longest. Well,
I was
going
to say the longest day. It was probably the longest one. I mean, that was a
Return of the King or Lord of the Rings. That was about 4 hours long.
Really?
Yeah. Let's see. The longest.
That Avengers movie was long too.
I think the Lawrence of Arabia was really long too, wasn't it, Chan?
Yeah.
My mother took me to see that.
You know, well, is up there too in the top.
As it turns out, with this list, it depends on what you want. You want a Hollywood movie, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Because we got some indie film that's 85 hours long, which I'm not.
No.
I'm not counting that. Let's see here.
85. God, how many
before the pandemic started, I went to one of those Avengers movies, and I said that was going to be the last 3 hour movie I ever.
Yeah, it's
of course I'm not the biggest fan of the cartoon movies, so
no, but that can be a while, but at least the movies are back together a little bit with this one. I want to see. I'd like to see this opera.
Avatar, I think, was three.
Yeah, this,
Jim Cameron has long movies.
Wasn't Schindler's List was pretty long, too?
It's saying that Cleopatra from 1963 with Elizabeth Taylor, 3 hours and 53 minutes.
Oh, man.
Yeah,
that's
the best. And it's kind of a snooze fest at times, too.
Yeah, she's kind of hot, but not that hot. just saying.
Not 4 hours worth, no.
No. What? We have, if you listen to any of the stuff and, I mean, what purports to be news on TV, I mean, it's so conflicting. you know, in terms of what you see around you and what, you know, we have 15 people will say we're never going to have a recession, okay, depending on what their definition is. So then Friday, somebody says, look at these leading economic indicators going down, and there's recessions on the way. And you listen to, I was actually stunned. I mean, Carl always manages to stun me. I don't know if you're listening Friday, you guys, but the idea that the federal receipts, tax receipts, are down precipitously from last year, that can't be a sign of health. How could it possibly be?
I mean, well, when you say AMC went up, since when? Because didn't they used to be like $20?
Oh, yeah. Well, it was one of the meme stocks.
Yeah.
But now it's up from 4:30, which is where it was before all that stuff started. And now it's 6:30.
So let's see the deflation in AMC. So if it was 15 before the pandemic, what was it?
Well, I could do my old chart here
right now. They fell off the cliff in 2020 or whatever.
AMC, I'll give this one in a 1 year.
And now they're 4.
Let me give it a.
I don't know, 6.
Let me give myself a 5-year line here. Self, it peaked at like 37 in early 2021.
That was 2020. I'm talking about before it went nuts with the meme stuff when they were getting pummeled by.
Yeah, it was like $2.
COVID.
Well,
It before COVID, I think it was like $15.
Yeah, yeah.
And then it got wrecked all the way down, and then they started saying, "Oh, there's too much short interest," and then they took it up to whatever. But since then, I mean, if anything pre-COVID was 15, and now it's 4, you know, that's and 30% more money is in circulation.
Well, there's a million. There's a whole bunch of different themes flying back and forth, and I guess the one I should have listened to was, I'm going to say 6 months ago or 4 months ago, before it has really, really, really started, I was reading this article from somebody and said, we're going to go into a recession, like a really crummy one, at least for most people. But don't worry about it in terms of the stock market, because we just came through the biggest recession we ever had, which was COVID. And all the Fed did was pour money in, and the market went up. So don't assume, just because we have a recession, that the market's going to go down, because the market is now a protected species. And will remain so until inflation gets so huge that even they can't lie about it. Essentially, was the thrust of the article, and I kind of agreed with what he said. But did I go out and buy a whole bunch of stuff for everybody? I mean, we're long, but we're not. You're never long enough when we're up this long. We're this much, right? We could have been longer, but it's. I mean, you've got all this stuff happening, Jen. You've got places that I see are losing business. Now, again, like Greg says, unless you compare it to last year and really have the notes, it's hard, it's really unfair to compare. It's like walking to a crowded bar and going, oh, God, everything's great all over the
world.
Well,
we're in the, you know, more the lower end of the spectrum in terms of development or, you know, rebounding. What's it called? The loop is low, and we're up. I mean,
you're up from where, though?
From last year.
I know, but from traditional?
No. He's still down more than 50% from there. But if we just track the foot traffic in the loop, and so the foot traffic is up 10%, then we're going to be up 10%.
Well, you guys have a nice outdoor. Yeah. It would really help you. Whatever any place in a building, you're unusual because you have the outdoor. If the building goes down, the places inside usually go down. Right.
The building's not going down anytime soon, I know that.
But I mean, down in terms of population.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, our friend Billy, his dad, of course, he was probably ready to retire, owned the name of the place, Orlando's, over in, what's the name of that building? There's a name of the building.
It's the insurance something else.
It's the insurance something else, not the insurance exchange.
Right.
You know what we're talking about, Jen, the one across... Wells from the insurance exchange. It was the insurance center or something. Well, all of a sudden, the building got to be 20% occupied. Well, how the hell do you compete there? Because whole idea of having a place in the building is people can have breakfast and lunch and don't have to go outside in the rain and whatever, right? I mean, that's part of the deal. Anyway, Jen, the 175 West Jackson, the insurance exchange, they're going to appoint a foreclosure person, right?
Yeah, I mean, they're trying to engineer a sale of the building. And, you know, I think there's a couple buildings, like I was talking about last week, that are in the same boat where they're trying to unload them now And this is kind of the, you know, the acid test. It's, you know, what a building of that, the size of the insurance exchange throws on the market, you know, it's going to, you know, be almost a fire sale price. There's just no way, even, you know, in a good year where that building has much to compete with because it's old. I mean, it's got lots of potential, but it isn't as attractive a place for somebody who wants to fill it up with a bunch of tenants. And you add to the fact that there's a bunch of other buildings in the exact same boat, some of them not so old, that are all hitting the market at the same time, which is just going to depress the value further. So it will be interesting to see what kind of sales they end up with. They probably will be sold to somebody, and the lenders are going to take a haircut on it because they're the ones sitting with the equity that was handed over to them, and they want to get rid of this thing pronto, even if they take a loss on it. Well, they'll give financing back to the buyer at an attractive rate just to unload it as an asset from their portfolio. But I think, you know, there's only so much of that kind of activity that's good for downtown or any downtown without just, you know, really putting the lenders behind the eight ball. And I think that enough of this is happening in cities like Baltimore and Atlanta too, where it isn't like these lenders are just can confine their losses to one city or one region. They're taking hits all over the country, all over the world. So,
well, the
I don't know where this will end up, but it's going to be a real, you know, day of reckoning for the banks.
Well, you know, it's sometimes just like when you walk by a restaurant, it's hard to figure out whether they're doing good or bad unless you know, like Greg says, what was last year's like? What was the same week last year, the year before? Or how much you ordering for next week? But the party line probably would be when you talk about what are the advantages of downtown areas and what are the advantages of a place like 175 West Jackson, like even the Board of Trade, these older buildings. The whole purpose, well, not the whole purpose, everybody thinks, oh my God, it's a bunch of rich lawyers, it's a bunch of offices, it's this, that's accounting firms, it's trading firms. That's to a certain extent a little bit of the sense of it, John, but it really isn't that at all. The idea of your downtown area, my stepfather used to tell me, they had a place down here, and he goes, there's only a few places in the country that you can have your personnel, you can get solid, good people from an entire metropolitan area that essentially can get, this is a while ago, essentially you can get back and forth to work for $2 a day, safely and fast. He goes, that is a massive advantage in how much people can, it wasn't that the Pullman had the vice president and the president and all those other people in the Borg Warner building. It was that the assistants, the secretaries, the starting out financial analysts, those kinds of people could all get here for a reasonable hour. You didn't have to drive. That's the beauty of a downtown area. If you lose that, and I mean, you look at the insurance exchange, you see a massive building. Well, there's a lot of companies even now that have a lot of personnel, right? I mean, if you're doing any kind of, even if you're a call center, for God's sake, right? Everybody there doesn't get a corner office, and you're not paying people a whole hell of a lot. You want to, the only way they can get there is to get the work at a reasonable price. Look at the price of cars. Look at the price of your licenses. Look at the price of gas, insurance.
Well, when Brookfield bought the building, it was, or they took over, or whatever it was, I think it was $300 million, and they borrowed $250 of it. And now they're saying it's worth $200 or something.
Yeah, they lost their whole $50. Unless they took
they lost their whole $50 and another $50.
Well, then yeah, probably another $50.
Right? Yeah. So, I don't know what it's what the cap rates are, but when you in just a few years you go from $300 to $200 to I don't know what it is now, but it's not going to sell for $200.
But the idea being is now, nobody really wants to take public transportation because, I mean, once you lose the safety and the idea that people can stay downtown afterward for a drink and still make it home on the L at 7 o'clock without getting mucked, once you lose that, but the difference in being able to travel to have a job where you can hop on the L in the morning versus having to have a car, John, what's the number? It's got to be what, $10,000 a year? Easy. I mean,
Tom, I think that, you know, I'd like to think, you know, there's been an improvement that I can see in ridership on the buses I ride, the L's I ride, the metros I ride, lots more people. You know, there's standees now on the last bus. Practically, I hadn't seen that for 3 years. So, I mean, the appearance is, guys, people are getting back in the swing of things. They got stuff to do. They need places to get to, and so on, which is all positive. But then you look at the enemy of this kind of return to normal, with artificial intelligence and all the hoopla surrounding that. There's a whole climate of thinking that the best way, to go forward is to get rid of people as human agents and employees because they're too expensive, they demand too much. There's so many attendant costs and having an office staffed with live people. There's got to be cheaper ways of doing it, and it's you can already see it happening. I mean, so many things I do now, whether I'm buying something online, I do all the label fill out. I do all the troubleshooting. If there's a problem with it, it bounces back to my email. There's nobody at the other end, a human being who's working with me or for me as an interface. So, and the goal, I think, is, if you're a retailer, certainly, or you sell stuff, to get rid of as many human beings as possible. And that's considered some kind of, desired end for everybody. But, at some point, we're going to have so few people doing anything that people are truly going to be disposable. I mean, they're already pretty disposable now. If you're trying to get a job or hang on to a job, you've got so much competition, whether it's younger people or a machine or something else. I see that kind of getting so much worse in the next 20, 25 years, where people are going to be considered, not worth the time or money to hire.
Well, it depends on the service.
Artificial intelligence is the bad guy in the new Mission Impossible movie.
But well, it was HAL at one point, right?
It's HAL, and then it was Skynet. Now it's, I think you call it the entity. I mean,
there's so many ways you can substitute what used to be produced by some fleet of human beings, and consider the job done, in a flash of an eye by some terminal or some interior process electronically. I just don't see much future for a worker. I mean, there will be need for people like in building trades and all that, but there'll be fewer and fewer people who are good at that, and they'll find ways of getting around that too.
Well, I don't know how, but people, if there's a service, I mean, when I go to a store, you'll never catch me. I won't say never. Might have one item. You're never going to catch me checking out my own stuff unless I get a discount. Why would I do that? Plus, if you go to one of these places, the prices are high enough now. It takes somebody to check you out with the new machines. They're so fast if they do it versus you do it. I don't see how the hell they're still not worth it, John. Unless you just don't want to mess with them. But there's a CVS out by Audrey. There's nobody in the place. Nobody. I mean, or there might be one person, but there's nobody. I went into I'm looking for a mattress, right? So I went to the hassleless place where there's nobody in the joint. And I walk in there and I'm going, what am I doing in here? And I'm sitting on a bunch of mattresses, and one feels pretty good, and it's like $1,500. And there's another one that's $1,800. My first question is, what's the difference? Now, that's a reasonably big thing to buy. I don't know what the difference is. That's why I'm there. Somebody should say, well, this one's got an extra layer or something, or it's all BS, it's the same. I mean, whatever it is, how do you, for $15,000, $18,000, $2,000, I should be able to talk to somebody who knows something more than me. Why, if I knew all about it, I wouldn't, what am I doing there, is my point.
Good luck, Tom. Well, think about what banking, retail banking, lines of people on their lunch hour cashing their paychecks. They're distrusted direct deposit, whatever. Well, you go into any bank now. What is a bank today? It might be a fancy lobby, one teller, and nobody in line. Unless you're some kind of, you need to speak to somebody about getting a loan. But other than that, nobody deals with checks anymore.
I do.
Well, I mean, I shouldn't speak for everybody. I don't. I mean, I just deposit it into my phone's app, and I don't even have that many checks to worry about.
I'm kind of curious as to the demise of the... Out of all the things that are competitive, banks are the cheapest things to use. I don't get it.
Apparently they're not cheap enough because they run them down to bare bones now, where people are considered you know, baggage rather than.
I would never leave Lakeside across the street because the two people that run the place, I know them by, I've known them for 20 years. Everything the firm needs, everything we need, we get it done immediately. It's way better just having some. My niece has a, she goes online, she's got a bank in Florida. I'm like, what are you doing with a bank in Florida? What do you mean? Well, it's not any cheaper. The places here are free. How can you get cheaper? And I, so somebody gives her a check. She didn't know what to do with it. She couldn't get it in the bank. I'm like, what is the point of that? I mean, there's no, I mean, well, maybe we're spoiled in Chicago, John, but the banking system is, I can't think of anything more efficient than our banking. There's we're in the office. Greg, how many banks are there within 1,000 yards of the front door of my place here?
Yeah.
10?
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
Oh, well, Chase is closing branches up near me, left and.
And that's
right.
After the Chase closed, right here.
Well, they don't like Northside guys.
I mean, I think I'm just saying the goal time. I mean, I agree completely. I mean, it is an inefficient system. It always was, but it's not efficient enough for the people who are running them.
But,
and they're going to make it more inefficient.
But
and
people
that means less tied to human beings.
All right, so, Jen, the. I went into a, remember Omni?
Yeah.
Actually, it wasn't Omni. It was a Dominix. But didn't Dominix own Omni? I think they did. I owned the Dominix.
Oh, there's Cub Foods. It was Cub Foods owned by...
I don't know. Somebody was owned by whatever. So
yeah,
I go in
there's Omni, too. I mean, I never shopped at Omni.
Well, Dominix is, having problems with their checkout people. They were going on strike or something. So I'm talking to this lady who's in her... I was young, so she was in her 50s. And I go, or she might have been in her early 60s. I started here, I was making like $13.50 an hour. Now I'm making like $15. With these new machines, I can do like three or four times as much as I could have when I had a cash register and I had to punch it myself. And she goes, I go through hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of thousands of dollars I check out a day. Tell me I'm the problem. It's $16 an hour. How could I be the problem? what do you think of... I don't see how, as labor attempts to get their piece of the pie, and of course management's convinced over the last 30 years everything's gone to China, and now it's kind of coming back, and there's actually... Labor has a little economic power. Management is just appalled that labor actually has... These guys from Petillo's, they lost the court case. Jen, does anybody pay attention to the courts? I mean, the government doesn't pay attention to the Supreme Court. I mean, is there anybody... Portillo's has yet to have a meeting with these guys, even though they just lost the court case, right?
Right. Well, that's, I think, going to be the way of the future, too. Just, people are going to ignore these kinds of controls or instructions. Go off and do their own thing. Who's going to stop them?
Well, I mean, does anybody pay attention to the court system? I don't think so.
No, I mean, and certainly we've acculturated people to disrespect it. We've taken the one recourse people had, the court system or the police force or whatever, to protect you from people who had no scruples, whatever. And they've been pretty much discredited from the top down. I mean, they've given the police a bad name, the Democrat Party.
Yeah. Well,
I just think it's an easy walk from there to just, you know, why do we pay attention to the courts, too? I mean, they're pushing all this stuff now that the Supreme Court is an out-of-control court or whatever. This is all designed with the same goal in mind, to get, you know, people off of this righteous idea that there's somebody looking out for you. You look out for yourself, don't expect anybody else to do it. And meanwhile, you'll get fleeced, but we don't care.
Well, the whole idea...
I mean, it sounds pretty crass, but it is. It's the only way I could see what's happening.
But I don't... As much as people can disagree, the idea that there shouldn't be a check and balance system, there shouldn't be a court system. If you decide something, you know... Lou used to always accuse Matty Weber of being a moral relativist. I mean, if you just decide all this is no good, it's like... It's like people decide, well, nobody needs religion anymore. I mean, I'm not the world's... But the idea that you got the way you are after going to these schools where people took the time to teach you right and wrong and everything else, not that your parents didn't do that as well, the idea that all of a sudden you're above all this stuff. No, you're not. I mean, whatever. But the idea, I mean, this UPS, the head of the union at UPS comes out and says, okay, The company's doing exceptionally well. They've raised all these prices. Management got rewarded. Shareholders got rewarded. It's our turn. Well, why not? Why shouldn't it be their turn? Just saying.
Yeah, well.
By the way, did you, I said that something, I got a few minutes here before Audrey comes on, and you're certainly welcome to hang in there for a while, John, but did you, American Airlines, because of the contract the United guys just signed, just bumped their offer $1 billion before the union came back at them, right? So they kicked their offer. These guys got $12 billion during COVID from the government. Well, that's a lot of dough.
For what? Yeah.
Well, it's allegedly to keep everybody paying when they weren't flying. No, you can...
And to, you know, buy out, you know, early retirement stuff. You get people off of their payroll, too. You know?
Well, they weren't supposed to do that, but...
Of course not, but... You know,
well, that's why there's an investigation. But these investigations ever do anything? Or are they just a...
No, they've already got... That's the conclusion they want, and it's just window dressing thing. You can see how jaded I've become.
Well, I mean, it's free press for the people in Congress. I mean, we were talking at dinner the other night about, you know, when you say the people in Congress are all this or all that. I know for a fact, John, you and I, and I think Greg, we're brought up better than that. You can't generalize by that, but you shouldn't be able to say because a couple of people are crooks that everybody's a crook. Yet when you have a group like that that is essentially their own group, if there's 25 bad apples or 50 or 100 and the others do nothing about it, then all of a sudden I think you can sort of get tarred with the same brush. If I like to ride a Harley, which I don't, and I joined a biker gang that was into drugs and God knows what else, I can't say, well, I'm in the gang, but by the way, I don't do any of that stuff. I mean, I either should find a gang that doesn't do that stuff if I don't want to be accused of it or something, right? I mean, you can't be hanging, what they used to say, or you can't be sleeping with dogs and wake up without fleas, right? I mean, it's just the way the world works. And so you wonder, people are losing track of these institutions because of the, you know, you lose track of the presidency because Trump's foibles. You certainly have no respect for this guy because his kids should have been shut down in Washington 20 years ago. I mean, and how many other people on both sides of the aisle have their kids who are probably friggin' useless running around Washington with real jobs and doing stuff and clerking for people and actually, you know, on the take? I mean, are we like the people in Saudi Arabia? If you're the royal family, everybody gets their finger in the pie or what? I mean, are we going
in my darker moments, Tom, you know, I can see this is all a grand strategy to weaken the country sufficiently to make it, you know, an easy pickoff by somebody else. I mean, if you can take the coastal cities like San Francisco and Portland and the northern cities like Minneapolis, you know, cities that have deteriorated greatly in the last 5 years, not accidentally, but by design, I think. And then you start demoralizing people about all these sacred institutions, so you get, you know, legitimate magazines with, you know, their correspondents trashing the Constitution, saying it's time to replace it. I mean, you can't really effect the kind of change that some of these truly evil people are after unless you destroy what people have learned, you know, and trusted in the past. And once you start eroding that kind of confidence, and it's happening with younger people today too, it's a pretty easy thing then to substitute anything that looks better or seems to fix the problem that has largely been created purposely in order to get rid of the protections and the freedoms that people have fought for and died for in this country. So I think it's all part of the strategy to weaken the country and weaken its resolve. And you look at what's happening with the population numbers and everything else, we're going to become a shrinking nation before we're through. Somebody's going to wait in. It's just like a business takeover.
Well, we have all kinds of time to talk about this because we got to head off to break here and bring Audrey on. But you wonder if the government is a reflection of where the society's become on its own. You know, you don't know which comes first, the chicken or the egg. I mean, I don't know.
No, but definitely the spokespeople, the megaphones or whatever, are pushing people to get behind them in these kinds of, you know, nihilistic screeds.
So it isn't like.
But if you, but you couldn't be
come to this.
But you and I can't be pushed that way.
Well, no, because I learned to distrust, you know, certain things about this country a long time ago, and believe more firmly in other things that I've become pretty much unshakable on. But not everybody has been around as long as you and I.
But you couldn't have pulled this crap, and the people came back from World War II. You couldn't have some shrill knucklehead up there taking people and saying everything you've ever known about right and wrong is all of a sudden wrong. Follow me. I mean, why all of a sudden are we there? Anyway, we got to go to break and bring on our SP Futures up 7. As if he was up 38, be right back, Stocks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to factor in the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other life decision. Your brain is smarter than your gut, and that's why you owe it to yourself to read Luckbox. We've made it easy because Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with timely, actionable trading ideas, and equips you with savvy investing tactics you don't already know, all while exploring how to live your best life through music, spirits, food, sports, travel, fitness, and a whole lot more. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on controlling their financial futures. It's for overachievers and alpha types who don't buy into Wall Street's investment gurus. It's for mavericks who believe in life, luxury, and the pursuit of happiness. It's for you! Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck, get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you are aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and try to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now.
Low and rope base, Stocks and Jacks. I'm tomorrow. We have burn on the board. SP Futures up 675. We went up all morning. We're drifting lower a little bit here. SP Futures up 31. They were both probably up almost twice as much as that when we came in, but they're still up. In the Dow, we got American Express down $3. Kind of whacked a little Friday. They had the earnings. We have Microsoft up 2, so kind of a mixed bag. The Dow's actually, Dow futures are up 17, so kind of a mixed bag in there. We got Chevron, Texaco up $1.30 as oil keeps. Well, it looks like it's breaking out here a little bit, which we'll get to in a minute. We're in Europe. DAX down 19.1%, FTSE down 20.2%, CAC round down 38.5, so lower, but. Fresh data shows rising recessionary risks. Well, okay, fine. We know that for sure. Nikkei up 396, 1.2%. Hang Seng down 407, 2.1%. So they're opposite directions. Shanghai down 3, call that flat. So we got one way up, one way down, and one flat. So it's odd. Friday, Dow was up 2, S&P up 1, NASDAQ down 30. So let's call that an inside day. Bonds down 4 basis points, 3.80. The Bund down 6 basis points, 2.37. Japan down 2 at 0.46. We've got oil keeps creeping, up 48 cents, 77.55. Brent up 46 cents, 81.53. Natural gas unchanged, 272. Our Bob up 3 cents, 283. So I actually put a little more in the Suburban yesterday at 385. Figured it'll be up next week, the way it is. Our Bob's creeping. Gold down 20 cents, but still 1966, hanging in the mid 1900s here. I got down to like 1920 and came back. Silver down 19 cents, over 24.65. Copper down a penny, 380. We've got Bitcoin down 926 now. That's a big move, 3%. 29,198. And we have the U.S. dollar. Now it's stronger against both. It's the euro is down to 1.109, so it's under 111. And we got the pound, which made it up to like 131, is now 128. So the dollar has been strained. Well, actually, the pound is one that really weakened after their inflation numbers. But still, against the euro, it's been this 109, 110, 111 for quite a while. Mm. Matt, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports. Cubs won.
Yeah, that is a fact. Let it be known, the Cubs did in fact win, despite what I say or ESPN says. Well, I want to say good morning. It's currently 7:37 a.m. on July 24th, 2023. Those are the facts. The weather today, Chicago, 74 degrees currently, a high of 86 degrees later on. Sunny skies throughout the day, similar weather tomorrow with a high of 94. Down in Phoenix, partly cloudy, 92 degrees currently, a high of 108 later on. The National Weather Service in Phoenix declares a excessive heat warning to stay in effect until this Wednesday, July 26. In the MLB yesterday, Diamondbacks lost their game against Reds 7-3. White Sox lost to Twins 5-4. And, of course, Cubs won their game against the Cardinals 7-2. Yesterday in golf, the Open wrapped up in England yesterday. Brian Harman of the U.S. took top position with a score of negative 13 and a total earnings of $3 million. It's a lot of money. Back to you, Chief.
Do we have Audrey?
We do indeed.
Hey, Aud.
Yes, you do.
We still have Jen. Did either one?
Good morning, Audrey.
Good morning, Jen. Nice to hear your voice.
Same here of yours.
Did you either one of you see the lady who was, I say lady, she probably looked, I mean, she was not a kid. Was it the chief ranger at Death Valley? Did you see this, Jen?
No.
Well, she said something about if it's, I just caught the first part, that if it's over 125 or 130, the helicopters can barely fly. And if it's over 120, we're not looking for you.
Wow.
So basically, if you're going to be dumb enough to go out in Death Valley and, like, do some hiking and you get lost, see ya. See you in the fall.
Called Death Valley for a reason.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, even the signs up there, they have these things, they slide into the signs that say excessive heat ahead or something. And
yeah, that's right.
I actually had a book. I don't know what happened to it. Audrey probably stole it. No, Audrey didn't steal it. It was how to
survive that mess that you call a bookshelf.
See? Shot fired. Had to do with, what you do in areas, safety while you're driving. And it said that if you get caught on some lonely road that, you know, in the daytime, you should always have a tarp in your car. You know, mm-hmm. So you put a tarp on the roof, put the tarp out there, and you hang under the tarp in the shade, and you have a whole bunch of water with you, and you wait for nighttime, and you walk out. And it said the amount of people that try and walk out in the daytime and die only to go back to where the car is and see nothing but water sitting there is incredible. I mean, it can't be like hundreds of people, but you do the best you can to hang in there during the day if you have water and you have a tarp, then you walk out at night. I mean, there's it's like a whole book, How to Survive, and we're all these places. And I guess us city dwellers, I don't know if we know how to do that, John. Well, I don't know if I'd walk out in the daytime and leave the water behind me, but I don't know if I'd be that dumb, but I hope it wouldn't be. Anyway, so we were out restauranting. I was talking about earlier, and Greg was on saying, if you don't really know, and I was saying, Audrey keeps talking to me, she's very in tune with the area, that she says, well, there's these festivals and this, and people are, and Greg says you have to really compare all these weeks, probably the summer months to years going by, to see if you're gaining or losing. Because she says, yeah, you're going to have weeks where everybody's out of town and everybody's at a festival, but unless you can compare it to a like time last year, you kind of don't know where you are, which kind of makes some sense. But your business, because of the lack of houses on the market, you kind of slowed down, eh?
Yeah, it's, as we've been speaking to for a while there, the lack of inventory. Well, there's two things going on here. It's the summer doldrums. You know, people think that the summer is a busy month, because traditionally people hunted for homes so they could be in their school district before Labor Day. But that's not true. The household formations are different. People don't adhere to that time. You know, it's something that goes on all the time. So you have July and August. People are on vacation. They're at barbecues. They're going to sporting events. They're just not as focused on homes. And add to the fact that there is a huge shortage of homes because people are not leaving their 3% to go get a 7 or 7.5% right now. So they're hunkering down, staying where they're at, and that just simply contributes to the shortage where if nobody's selling, there's nothing to offer anybody. So the few homes that come on that are ready to go are snapped up, and the only thing that's sitting are homes that are overpriced and dated.
What do you say? What do you mean by when you say dated? What do you mean? What's your definition? I know, but just tell the listeners.
Well, anything that's it's not. Well, let's say if you still have your avocado refrigerator and stove and your shag carpeting, you're dated.
A waterbed too.
I think you just insulted Mr. Flanagan.
And there are more of those out there than you would think.
Wow. Well,
I bought one of them 26 years ago, Audrey. It had an avocado stove and a range hood too to match. But they went out in the garbage about a year after I moved in.
What's interesting though is a lot of these old appliances still work.
Oh, sure.
And I wonder how many of us who can say who bought our expensive new refrigerators now will be working in 30 or 40 years. Well, a lot of people put them in their garage for, the typical, let's have an extra refrigerator for beer and parties. So a lot of times that old refrigerator just goes to the garage.
Where it should be, where you get more beer. Just saying.
That's right.
It's a
problem. And, I have quite a few buyers who we're just watching every day to see what's coming on. I've sent mailings to people asking if they're interested in selling their homes in a certain area that my clients like. And so far, it's just, it's that time, and it ebbs and flows like anything else, and you kind of got to roll with the punches here.
Well, you were, over the time you've been on the air, and Nancy, too, it seems like, everybody just, casts a shot at the younger generation like Mr. Byrne, where, they can't do anything themselves, which I don't think is all that true. Some guys can and some guys can't, just like in my generation. But when you say people want stuff in move-in condition, is it more nobody likes to live during construction? I didn't. I used to like to remodel houses. I didn't really like doing it when I was in one. Is it that, or is it in order to make the new mortgage rate, every penny is accounted for, and it really isn't? It's not just laziness. It better be move-in condition because I can't afford to replace the roof 2 months after I get into this place.
Well, I think it's a little bit of both. I think you have kids who manage to scrape together. Well, a lot of people don't have the traditional 20% down payment. You can do a conventional with 5%, as little as 5%. So a lot of people don't have that money to come in and go, wow, we're going to buy this and fix it, or they have the expectation that they don't want to live like that. So they will, that's part of it. People will wait and wait for the right home that's fixed to their taste and then move in that. And a lot of it, sometimes people, to your point, not only cannot do it, but can't afford the tools and time to do it. I mean, it's expensive just to buy tools to fix things up. And when two people are working full-time to pay that mortgage, a lot of times you don't have time. And if you have children, especially small children, do you want them living in construction dust and dirt? No, you don't. So it makes it a little difficult for people sometimes. So you have to kind of pick your battle.
Well, if you're not a manufacturing engineer, John, believe me, I've done this. If you decide you're going to remodel a home after work and on weekends, even if if somebody helping you and the two of you get along, you sit there and go, okay, this is going to be 200 hours work. Well, hell, if you're talking three nights a week after work, that's 9. You might get 16 on the weekend. That's 25. You're talking 200 hours is 8 weeks of this. if you're just doing it yourself. It's a long time.
I got a guy down the alley from me here who's residing his garage. He started it in March, and he's nowhere near finished. But you hear him working on it a little every day.
Yeah. I mean, it's
I think it always turns into a bigger project than you think, too. It's never, right. I'm just going to paint the room. You know, all of a sudden, then you're patching, and then you're going to change the molding, and then something else looks bad, and all of a sudden, bam, you've got the whole room ripped apart.
Well, plus now it looks so much better in the room next to it. You got to do that one now, too.
Exactly.
But, you know, we're kind of surprised on it. Maybe you've seen this, or Nancy was talking about the difference in rates. Well, maybe not so much now, though. Mortgages are up to the difference in rates between the mortgage rate and obviously the credit card rate, if you're putting something on your credit card, but even the home improvement kind of rate. I'm kind of surprised that, and again, I'm asking this question, if I go to buy a house and I got the mortgage ready, and all of a sudden, like you say, the appliances, maybe they still work, but maybe they're 25 years old, and you know, maybe they're God knows what color. If I really want, or you know, my wife or girlfriend or whoever wants the high end stuff, why wouldn't I just ask the owner, here's the stuff I want, it's going to cost you $3,000. Instead of paying $360 for the house, I'll pay you $363 if you buy them.
Because it's personal property. It has nothing to do with the value of the house.
But my point is, it's way cheaper to lob that on the mortgage than it is for me to go in afterward and charge it on my credit card.
Nobody's going to do that I know of. I wouldn't tell my clients to do that. I mean, if you're just going to go in and say the house is dated, one thing, but you can't, you know, to go in, that personal property, those are not fixtures. Those are not permanently attached. So, you know, I'm not going to give you money just because you don't like the appliances. That just is not going to fly.
Well, I know I was from a different era. We did all kinds of stuff on the clothes, on the mortgage. You lent the guy money. You did all kinds of stuff. People don't do that anymore, but I can remember lending people down payments.
Well, the problem
much more regulated now, boys.
The last recession kind of killed that when people ended up abusing the mortgage industry so badly, and we ended up with a giant fiasco because of it. When the banks started lending over 100% of the price of the house, I knew we were in trouble, and it was a matter of time. So the fact that, you know, it's never enough for people, and they'll manage to screw it up no matter what we do. So, you know, that's why we are so restricted now, and it's tough to get a mortgage. You got to come up with that paperwork, and you have to qualify. So the days of easy money and people giving you this and that, you know, that's just gone.
What happens?
You could get closing costs from people. Now that's a different story. You could ask for up to on a conventional 3% of the mortgage for closing costs, which will help pay for your survey, your attorney's fee, or the mortgage loan company's fees. That's different. So that will go towards your closing costs. But as far as fixtures, appliances, no.
What do you do if say John and I were in the remodeling business? Boy, I have to go out and buy a new pickup truck. If we were in the remodeling business and you found us a place, you haven't seen these lately, but once in a while you come across one. What has her feelers out there? It's pretty good at this. Make that real good at this. What if you found us a place? An area where all the homes were $350, and these people just never did anything. There's a leak in the roof. There's this. There's that. There's all kinds of crap going on. They're hoarders. It's going to take us, 4 weeks for John to throw all the stuff and check it all out and throw it in a dumpster, and we can get the place for $100,000. Right? Now, is there any way to go to a bank and say, especially if we maybe have a little bit of a track record, to say we'd really like a mortgage of $250? Because we're going to do this work, we have a track record. Can you do that, or do you have to go get the mortgage at 100, and then you got to go to the bank and hopefully they'll loan you the rest?
You cannot do that on a conventional. But a lot of times, if you could do an FHA, you could get a rehab loan wrapped around with your mortgage. But that's a little more difficult thing to do. A lot of sellers don't want to do that, but it is it's a possible thing. So an FHA loan with a rehab loan wrapped into it. But here's the catch, that if you do that, then you can't do this yourself. You have to have professional certified contractors to do it, and it drives your cost up, and that's why a lot of people don't do it.
Why can't you do it yourself? What if you are a contractor?
If you're a certified contractor, that's one thing, and you have to produce receipts and bills, and it's makes it much more complicated. You know, it's not just here. Here's the money. Go fix up your house. Now, it has a lot of rules and regs attached.
You're accusing John and I of not being certified?
Certifiably, baby.
Wait, shot fired again, John. What the hell? We're taking hits this morning here.
Not John, just you.
This is all developed, say, in the last 40, 50 years or so, right, Audrey? It used to be, I mean, depending on what your relationship with the bank, you could do lots of things that would be unthinkable now. But it is so highly regulated, federally insured loans. There's all these stipulations. It's got to be this, it's got to be that. There's no wiggle, no bargaining power at all.
Right, but it used to be, you're right, you go into your neighborhood savings and loan, how about that, and sit down and say, I want to do this. They'll say, okay, if the house is worth this, then it's going to be worth another, you know, 100. When you're done, I'll give you 50, whatever, and come to a loan, and then it would be like a personal loan. Yeah, that's not what's really going on right now. So that's a tough thing to do. So you've got to have the funds or access to the funds to be able to do that kind of thing now.
Or big deposits at that bank or something, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I remember when the credit cards kind of first started, and I was doing remodeling at the time. It was a long way, way a long time ago. First National Bank, I just bought this place. I need a $8,000 remodeling loan. Are you guys interested? We don't really want to do anything like that. So the next day, I get an application from First National Bank of Irving Park for a Visa card with a $10,000 line of credit. So I took the application. I go back to the bank. I go, really? The guy goes, all right, we'll give you the loan.
Well, you know what has kind of taken a lot of some of that place, to your point, is these personal loan places, you know, LendingTree, things like that. You get a personal loan, but again, you need the good credit and stuff. But a lot of these places will take your application on a one-by-one, because this is something that, you know, they sell. It's not a bank. They've got their own little group of people who fund this stuff. And a lot of people can get loans on by going to one of those. And they're mostly you have to, you know, do your homework, but a lot of these are very reputable. And people will get a short-term loan, year, 2 years, like that, and the interest rates seem to be competitive. So I've seen people do that.
But you could. There's a few banks in Orland, and I know the people at Lakeside. I mean, if Jan and I were to get the place, and we got a $100,000 mortgage on what obviously is a $400,000 neighborhood, we might be able to get a $100,000 loan out of Lakeside. It would be more of a personal loan, right? Although it could be a second mortgage.
Well, you're talking about probably an unsecured loan, so you've got to have credit, you know, to back that up. So,
well, we could drop a second mortgage on it, but at the time it wouldn't be worth anything until we get done with our construction, right?
Yeah, so that, you know, that goes back to relationship banking too.
Which, you know, well, we don't really ever. So what? You've been correct in that you say the prices are hanging in there the way they are. You would never guess. Just by looking at the numbers, if you were to ask if there is such a thing as a fifth grade economics student, and you would say, by the way, the mortgage rate just like doubled or weren't even more than doubled in 2 years, the kid, he or she, is going to say, well, the price has got to be down, but they're not. They're not really. In some areas, I think in some places they were really overblown, like L.A. and San Francisco, they've come down from being way high to sort of way high. But in your area, in Chicago, they sort of really haven't. Now, some of that supply, do you think, I'll use the term, are we going to get away with this for the next 3 or 4 years? The price
is
hanging.
I don't want to say the word get away. I mean, this is just reflecting value at this point. And people are all upset about this interest rate. And as I had told my clients when they were looking, especially first-time buyers a couple of years ago, it's like at 3% to 4%, it's free money. To be, I've been in this business long enough that you should buy something if it's not your dream house. Just get a foothold in this market because it's a once-in-a-lifetime occurrence. The historical norm is 8%.
Right.
So that's just a fact. And you throw the fact on that there is extreme competition for houses, it's supply and demand like anything else. And that's just not going away soon. So, yeah, are we in a recession? Yes, I think we are. A lot of people are just, you know, making it paycheck to paycheck, but you still need a place to live. Renting is astronomical. It's going to cost you out here almost twice as much as purchasing something. So if you have to live somewhere, and you may reduce your expectations, but you have to live somewhere.
Well, we in a situation, as I read it, is even though I think technically, Jan, we're most people are in a recession. Now, that doesn't mean that big numbers that the government looks at or whatever they look at say we're in a recession, but if something squirrely happened here where all of a sudden a lot of people got thrown out of work and actually had to move, I think these home prices are really, we have a potential problem. If that doesn't happen, that's why I ask God, if everything stays the way it is and we don't have a real big problem, I think you're 100% accurate. But that's what happened in 2007, 2008. Enough people got thrown out of their place where they couldn't move, right? Or they had to move, and all of a sudden their place didn't appraise out at where they paid for it, even though they were paying the rent or the mortgage. And all of a sudden they had to move, and they sold their place for $180 when they paid $230 and couldn't afford to go somewhere else. I mean, it was the fact that people had to make the trade caused the problem, right? I mean,
right.
Caused the problem to accelerate, let's put it that way.
Well, the problem was that back then, too, there was no place to hide. It was one of the only times in my lifetime I remember the stock market and the housing market went at the same time. Right. So there was no place to hide for anybody.
Right.
Yeah, it was a really a tough time. And I think the housing prices and the mortgage clearly have gotten away from how much people are making more of. I mean, And Jen and I were talking about it last Thursday. I don't know if you, I mean, this huge raise the United Airlines pilots have got, huge. It's going to be, you know, what's it going to be, Jen? It's going to be 40% over the next 4 years, 32 to 40%. And I don't think they've, what would you say last time they got a raise? It was before COVID, right? So
I think they deserve a raise, actually.
But I'm saying if you look at a 40% raise over 7 years, at the end of that 7 years, I don't think they're ahead of the game, do you?
No.
Well, so that's not the world's definition of recession, but I guess I would say that pilot's in a recession. He's not doing as good as he did the year before, right? Isn't that a recession?
Well, I don't think anybody's ahead of the game right now. I think that we're all just, you know, your money's buying less. So I think it's a tough time for everybody, unless you're just been really well lucky enough to get yourself well situated or retired early. But I mean, your buying power is down, so yeah. You know, people are, you know, you're forking over more at the gas station, you're forking over more at to feed everybody, so you're forking more to fix up your house, so you're running to stay in the same place. So that's unfortunately, you know, like anything else, and it ties in. So, you know, it squeezes your buying power, but life still has to go on.
Speaking of which, are we buying lottery tickets tonight along that vein?
Every now and then I buy one. Why? Is it worth a lot of money?
Yeah, what are we up to, like $490 million or some huge number tonight, Jen?
I don't really need that much.
Now, Matt, if these guys want in, it's not like I don't trust them, but we want the money Venmo'd over here. We're only taking cash if we're going to let them into the group.
Cash in a large bag outside of Stocks and Jocks HQ.
Yes.
Yeah. Pick up.
And then Matt will be happy to take the large bag. You know,
I'll be very happy.
You,
yeah.
You know, there was a group on the floor that actually won. What they win? Like $300,000.
I don't remember.
And the girl never came back with the ticket.
Mm.
And the ticket never got cashed. Mm. And they know they had a winner. The girl, then she got so afraid of whether she lost it or did something, and never got cashed. Like 10 guys went in on this lottery thing, and it was $300,000+.
Mm.
Oh well, Lotto
loves that.
Oh God, yeah. I mean, a lot of them don't get cashed. Well, not a lot, but I think a lot of them don't get cashed, don't they? Especially the smaller ones. Anyway, S&P futures up 8 and NASDAQ futures up 33. This week's going to be, we're going to be doing earnings every day. We do the Fed stuff this week, so we're going to be really, really active. Well, thank you. Good stuff as usual. John, thank you. Talk to you later in the week. Matt, nice job. Be back tomorrow. Stocks and Jocks.
Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to PTIsecurities.com. PTI ProDirect.
trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at ptiprodirect.com. Nadex, offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit nadex.com. HomeSource Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit hamzyanalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. Dax Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.
What did you expect? Welcome, Sonny. Make yourself at home. Marry my daughter. You've got to remember that these are just simple farmers. These are people of the land. The common clay of the New West. You know. Morons.